I'm telling you, I knew today would be amazing. We're not there yet. I've got 2 hours still of programming. But so far, so amazing, and I knew it would be. Welcome to the program. I'm Jim Rome. I hope you didn't miss that. Sean Casey. It is a tradition unlike any other in the jungle, or at least in the top three. Sean Casey showing up on opening day and doing Sean Casey-type things. He is so amazing. Case is such a great dude that he's one of those guys where it's natural. Eric Burns said it best. Nobody's that cool. Nobody's like that every single day. There's no way that guy is real. He can't be that good of a dude. That Eric Burns cut, and he's right, the Eric Burns pod that I did on the Reinvention Project is incredible. If you like that sound drop, it was like more than an hour of that. Just Eric Burns going Eric Burns. You know, like Sean Casey going Sean Casey. Case really is that good of a guy. He's been coming on this show like for decades. He has shown up like that every single time. If Sean Casey has a bad day, you would never know. And I guarantee he does. We all do. But you would never know it. The guy's just so amazing. And it's not because he was wired that way. It's not because like he's like naturally predetermined that this is the way I'm going to be. I'm just always optimistic. I'm always happy. He's worked at that like he worked at his craft. That's a mindset that he developed. He is such an amazing dude. Every single time, like this guy nails it, Sam in Grand Rapids. Freaking Sean Casey is the best. Love the stories, love the energy, love what he's doing with the Miracle League, loved him as a player, war opening day. See, the problem with Sean Casey is when I've only got that amount of real estate, say I've got 8 minutes, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, and not 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, what do you do with Sean Casey? I mean, literally, I could have gone into any number of storylines in Major League Baseball on this opening day, right? What about the Astros? What about the Phillies? What about the Mets? What about the Yankees? What about the NL West? What about the Dodgers? What about the Padres? There are so many great storylines. You know, the new rule changes. But when I think about Sean Casey, what I want, man, I want his stories. There's nobody better at telling a story than Sean Casey. And I'm still laughing at Brad Lidge, bro. When I fired open his Instagram feed and I looked at it, it just made me laugh, even before I clicked on it. Brad Lidge, bro. And then you click on it and he tells this amazing story about the sequencing and that at bat. Brad Lidge, bro. It's a great dude. He might be the best dude walking the planet right now. I mean that. At Van Gobel writes, amazing. He's such a class individual. He played for our Detroit Tigers, and this is not a typical take. He was a professional. He treated people great. It was so infectious to our team. I could definitely imagine him on Dan Campbell's staff. That's what I mean. You know, there are two types of people. Those who make it better or those who make it worse. I really see it that way. It's that binary. There are those who make it better and those who make it worse. And Sean Casey clearly is one of those people who makes it so much better. So much better. Romeo Void, after listening to Sean Casey, I only have one question for him. Which wall does he want me to run through? Mick in the 216. The other thing about Case, we didn't get into it. He's in that space too. He's in the personal development space. He's got an entire program that he teaches to people and teenagers, young athletes, non-athletes. It's really good. Really, really good. So there's so much to like about him. And then there are some other people that don't make it better. As an example, this guy, Jaime. I wanted to contact you and let you know how much I appreciate you and give you some credit. So I skipped down to see who sent that. I'm like, wow, that's out of character. That does not sound like this guy at all. Steven S.A. So with that in mind, let me reread that first sentence and consider the source. Consider the guy who wrote it. Steven S.A. Because normally I don't see that guy as a positive guy or somebody who makes anything better. No offense, Steve. Jaime, I wanted to contact you and let you know how much I appreciate you and give you some credit. It can't be easy getting on the radio every day for decades and promoting loser towns like Detroit, Cleveland, and Sacramento. Big props to you. Stephen S.A., War Jimmy, loving three cities no one ever wants to go vacation in. Yeah, I should have known better, Steve. I should have known better than to think that you were going to give me credit for anything at all. Listen, I'm not saying it to say it. I'm not saying it to curry favor. I don't say anything that I don't mean. I say what I mean, and I mean what I say. And if I hype Detroit, and if I hype Cleveland, and if I hype Sacramento, it's because I've been there. Because I have experiences there. Because I have great memories of my time there. Yeah, Rome. Sure you do, Rome. You're a liar, Rome. You're a liar and a felon. I'm actually neither. I have great memories of my time in those towns. And can I also tell you, this show would not be this show without those towns. Those towns have almost as much to do with this show being what it is. And when we're talking about the show being what it is, then we're talking about my life being what it is, because this show has given me everything. Those three towns that you reference have as much as almost any other town and fan base for the jungle being the jungle. Yes, I said it. Detroit, Cleveland, and Sacramento. Extraordinarily important towns. Yeah, Rome, you know why they had so much to do with your show being what it is? Because they've got nothing else to do there. Again, a lie. Great towns. Detroit, Cleveland, Sacramento. I'm not saying they're the only three. Believe me. San Diego was pretty important. Kansas City, pretty important. Crapchester, pretty important. Albuquerque, pretty important. I'm just saying I'm not here to take a dump on these towns. And I speak from experience.
It's all factories.
And by the way, bro, San Antonio has been really important in my development as well. The corporate company that I used to work for was based there. We had great tour stops there. Programmers there. I was on a 50,000-watt blowtorch there. I sort of cut my teeth there as well. But bro, you don't live in Montecito. What are you doing? And I'm not here to crack on San Antonio. I'm just saying. Pot, kettle much, brother. Another great town. But stop acting like you live in Bel Air. I mean, come on, dude. Brentwood didn't want any of that. The Hamptons? Steve. Again, Steve doing Steve things. Remember, Steve, there are two types of people. Those who make it better and those who make it worse. I'm not going to judge you, dude. You ask yourself, are you making it better or are you making it worse? And then if you say you're making it better, I'm going to say you're wrong. Sacktown, where are you? It's over. 1-800-636-8686. Ian Eagle is going to join me at 20 past. Another amazing human being. What's your beef? The top of hour number three. That's going to be fun. Get up in here. And again, I had a conversation yesterday that was incredibly inspiring to me. Mack Brown. That's episode 261 of the Jim Rohn podcast. Notice what we've tried to do more of. I'm trying to get you some of the guys that come on the daily program and then put them in long form on the podcast as a way of kind of changing up. You know, reinventing. Ding! Mack Brown long form was amazing. So we've been doing more and more of that. All right, in the meantime, as proud as I am to be a product of the University of California system, the UC system, and I'm proud as hell of that. In fact, two members of the XR4TI are UCers, Alvy and Jack Savage. Both UCers. It's kind of amazing. Three of us, and this was not by design. It just happened. Alvy is UC Santa Cruz. Jack Savage is UCLA. I'm UC Santa Barbara. Chalk is Ivy. I don't even know if James Kelly graduated high school. Anyway, I'm really proud of my UC roots. But despite that, I'm trying to rack my brain right now, and I'm trying to remember the last time that I talked Cal Bears basketball on this program. We used to, but it's been a minute. or two, or hell, 10. Because quite frankly, the program has given me zero reason to do so. That is until now, damn it. Because Golden Bear fans, there is some enormous news coming out of Berkeley, and it's news that I'm all about. Big, big, big news. Big news in the form of a 6'9", 250-pound, chiseled, bilingual maniac who is now in charge of your basketball program. Golden Bear fans, stand the hell up. Get ready to break dance because you are once again relevant. Because your administration just hit an all-time jackpot of a hire. The school announced yesterday the new leader of the program is none other than Mark Mad Dog Mattson. That's right. The guy who set the standard for the bah of victory parade speeches. Arguably the greatest jungle drop of all time. He is your new head coach.
Thank you to the greatest fans in the world. Yeah. Who let the dogs out? And to those who speak Spanish, les agradecemos y les decimos que el año que viene no haremos otra.
Big grande día para los perros. Big day for who let the dogs out. Hey, listen, I'm not joking. Mark Mattson is back home in the East Bay leading Cal and not his Stanford Cardinal. The second I heard that, I myself wanted to go full-on breakdance, just like the dude did back on the stage celebrating the Lakers back in the day. Man, he is one of my all-time favorite cats. I love Mark Mattson. I do. He is a one-of-one dude, a guy who cannot be replicated, duplicated, or impersonated. The Mad Dog is as authentic as they come. A guy with an IQ only matched by his work ethic, his intensity, his passion. And his passion for the game is matched only by his passion for baking bread. No, for baking fresh bread. You heard me correctly, Alvy.
What I like to do, I like to bake fresh bread.
Really?
Or not. I grind my own wheat. And I'll really clean off the kitchen counter. I'll knead it, get some olive oil out and whatnot. And really try to just make something very, very healthy, very nutritious. Occasionally, I'll bring it to the guys.
You're kidding.
Right when I thought that I couldn't respect or admire this guy anymore. I hear that. I remember that. Listen, if you want to clown this guy at all, even a little, I'm here to set you straight right now. Because maybe you have not been following this dude as closely as yours truly has the last few years. But the fact is, this dude is killing it as a coach. No joke. He put that brilliant Stanford mind of his to work. And then again, coupled that with that great work ethic. And this guy's become a damn good coach. A really good coach. And he's paid his dues. He started as an assistant. One stop included his alma mater, Stanford. As you know, Laker fan, he was the head coach of the Defenders for a season, an assistant with the Lake Show for six seasons. He then left the NBA game to go back to the college game in 2019 to become the head coach at Utah Valley. And all the Mad Dog did there is what the Mad Dog always does. Win, win, win. Two WAC regular season titles the past 3 years and was named 2023 WAC Coach of the Year. And now he's heading to a team, and let's be frank, Pac-12 honks. And he's going to a conference that badly needs the Mad Dog energy.
Greatest fans in the world!
I'm telling you, I've got more thoughts on this guy. I wanted to start that, and I wanted to get into that take. But that is such a great hire. Such a great hire for Cal and Stanford. Hey, listen, I know you have to fire somebody to hire somebody, but you're going to really let that guy, your guy, go across town to your rival? I've got to think that if that Stanford job was open, he's going to his alma mater. But it wasn't. And Cal got him. And it's a brilliant hire. And I have more thoughts on that, which I'll get to. But I want to make sure that Ian Eagle gets his run. That's coming up next. Hey, Cal fan, you've had no reason to come up in here in a long time. A long time. What a day. Sacramento Kings fan, have a reason to celebrate? UC Berkeley fan has reason to celebrate. Opening day, Sean Casey and Ian Eagle, another legend, joins us when we come back.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. So can I reiterate, this is an amazing day. And nobody likes I told you so, but I told you so. I knew it would be. And we're not there yet. Already having an awesome day. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. We're live in SoCal. So why do I say that? Opening day for Major League Baseball and a tradition unlike any other. Sean Casey, the mayor, came in. Find me a better human being than that guy. Then, once you realize you can't, I'm going to ask you this. Find me a classier person than this next guest. An Emmy Award-winning broadcaster, a play-by-play announcer for CBS Sports, Turner Sports, Westwood One Radio Sports. He has served as the Brooklyn Nets play-by-play announcer since 1995. No one better. He is one and one, one of one. Ian Eagle is my guest. Ian, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate this. Thank you so much for making time. How are you, my dude?
Hey, what's up, Romy? Good to talk to you, bud.
It is so good to have you, Ian. Appreciate it so much. Let me jump right into it because I don't want to waste any of your time. But starting with the Final Four, nobody anywhere could have predicted or expected this particular Final Four, Ian. How unusual yet awesome is this group of four to you?
It's definitely funky. It's definitely different. I dig it. I like stories that come out of left field. I like the fact that there's new names, there's new participants. Since seeding began in 1979, it's the first Final Four without a top three seed. Was UConn underseeded? Yeah, they were, but they were a four seed. Miami, a five seed. San Diego State, a five seed. FAU, a nine seed. You could have polled people filling out brackets before this tournament began and asked them, what does FAU stand for? And I think maybe 20% would have said Florida Atlantic University. So to me, it's got a little bit of everything. You've got the history with UConn, and then you have three programs that are trying to make their own version of history in Houston this weekend.
All right. So in your opinion, is it a one-off? Is it an anomaly? Is it an aberration? Are we going to see a return of the Blue Bloods to the biggest stage going forward? Or given the changing landscape of college sports, could this in fact be the new normal?
Yeah, I don't think it's a one-off. I know in the past we've had great stories. George Mason going to the Final Four, VCU going to the Final Four, Loyola Chicago, Final Four. And each time that's happened, we've said after the fact, oh, yeah, this is going to become more of the natural, usual form of college basketball. And it didn't really happen. A year ago, who was in the Final Four? Duke, North Carolina, Villanova, Kansas, the eventual champion. I think now with the transfer portal, with NIL, with the level of play now being pretty close across the board, Jim, you know this. You've been following college hoops for so long. If you used to go with the eye test of, all right, look at this team, look at that team. Okay, I could tell you which team's the blue blood, which team is trying to just piece together a competitive group. That's just not the case anymore. If you didn't know FAU and Kansas State, if you knew nothing about those two teams, showed up at Madison Square Garden and just asked somebody arbitrarily, okay, who's who? I don't know if they would have been able to tell you. FAU looks like they belong. They've got the look of a team that belongs in Houston in the Final Four. I think things have changed. They've changed dramatically, and I don't think we're going back. I think this is the way things are going to be.
Ian Eagle is joining us. You know, I hear exactly what you're saying, so maybe this question doesn't make as much sense, but I was going to ask you, speaking of the Blue Bloods, you ask me, UConn, given their history, I can make an argument that they're every bit the Blue Blood that Duke, yep, Carolina, Kansas, and UCLA are, but they're never characterized as such. They're never included in that group, seemingly. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's recent history. I think back to the second tournament that I did. It was 1999 for CBS. I was in Sacramento, and who was there? UConn. That was their first run to a national championship. Jim Calhoun was a fast-talking New Englander. I was basically understanding every four words that he was saying in our coaching sit-down with him prior to the game. I was just trying to follow along. he was speeding along with all the information on his team, and I'm trying to jot down stuff, and I realized, you know, this guy had a serious command of his team, how to build a winner. And then that was it. From that point on, you recognized that UConn had figured out the secret sauce. They win it with Kevin Ollie, then there's a dip, and now Dan Hurley has been exactly what they needed, someone to build the program. And I think give a lot of credit to him for recognizing that he had to make some changes in how he handled things, his bedside manner, how he dealt with officials. It doesn't mean he's not intense. He still is. He brings all the passion. But I think he picks and chooses his spots, and I think his team has fed off of that. Yes, UConn belongs in that conversation. Then look at their group. They check every box. They have the dominant big man in Sanogo. They have the NBA guard in Jordan Hawkins that's going to play at the next level. They have the all-everything performer in Andre Jackson Jr. They've got young blood in Caravan and Klingon. They're really stacked. To me, they're the best team in the Final Four. And if you're asking me, I would tell you it would be a surprise at this stage if they don't win the whole thing.
I'm not going to argue that. Ian Eagle is joining us, except to say that there are no absolutes in this tournament. But you're right. Going into the final weekend, they look like a cut above. You know, Ian, when you talk about what it was like back in 1999 when you were in Sacramento and you saw UConn, Jim Nance's amazing tenure as the lead voice of the NCAA tournament is going to end Monday night with his 32nd consecutive national championship broadcast, and you will succeed him at the Final Four next year in Glendale. Listen, I'm not just saying this, I mean this. I know that you prepare for every assignment, regardless of what it is or where it is, as if it is the Final Four. That's part of what makes you, you. That said, what does this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity represent to you as you look ahead to it?
It means a lot, obviously. And, Romy, I have to say now that I've just flashed back in my own brain, 98, 99, 2000, I'm going through my Rolodex, mental Rolodex. UConn was in Denver that year. My first year was Sacramento, and it was Arizona, it was Maryland, it was Illinois State, it was Tennessee, it was Nicholls State, it was Utah State. The next year was UConn, 1999, so that's where I got my first taste of Jim Calhoun and the Huskies. As far as me, look, ultimately, not much is going to change in how I approach it. Of course, it's going to be this extra weekend, and it's going to be three more games, and they just happen to be the three biggest games of the season for college basketball. But in how I approach the job, the energy level, the information, the connectivity with analysts and the sideline reporter, Bill Raftery, Grant Hill, Tracy Wolfson, the production team, all of that is going to be very seamless. And ultimately, it's about the game. If the game is great, I promise you, the coverage will go parallel with it. And if the game isn't, then I've got to up the entertainment factor as opposed to the information factor. And I have a good sense of that. I've done so many of these games now through the years. Obviously, 25-plus NCAA tournaments. So this event is something that's really close to my heart. And the fact that Jim Nance has done it at such a high level for so long just means he set the bar so high. So I recognize the assignment, and I absolutely do not take it lightly.
Extremely well said, and I know that for a fact. Ian Eagle joining us. Listen, before you go, as the TV voice of the Nets, you've seen a solid year from Brooklyn. I want to ask you about them. I want to ask you, Ian, specifically about Ben Simmons. He's now been shut down for the rest of the season due to a lingering back injury. What do you think his overall basketball future looks like now?
I don't know. I don't know if he knows. I think they'll say all the right things. He has new representation. The Nets are going to say all the right things. They look forward to having Ben back in the fold next year at 100% so he can bring all of the different skills that he does to the floor for them. And that's what they visualized when they traded for Ben Simmons and the James Harden deal. But behind the scenes, I don't know. I think it's a lot murkier and mysterious because we just don't know what the motivation level is and if he's now getting used to this. You know, this is not just 1 year for Ben Simmons. This is a lost 2 years. Last season basically didn't happen for him. So when you look back at some of those highlights, Jim, when Ben was dominating, going to the All-Star team and a candidate for Defensive Player of the Year in the NBA, it feels like a long time ago now. And that's what's concerning if you're the Nets. How to prepare for next year and build your team if you don't know what you're going to get from Ben Simmons. I can't get inside his brain. I don't know about his love for the sport and whether or not this is driving him to be great once again. We just don't know. But as far as planning purposes for the Nets, I think they've got to have a plan A, plan B, plan C. And they can't just assume that Ben Simmons is going to be a part of this thing.
All fair. He is an Emmy Award-winning broadcaster, play-by-play announcer for CBS Sports, Turner Sports, Westwood One Radio Sports. And as I mentioned, Brooklyn Nets play-by-play announcer since 1995. Ian Eagle, my guest. Ian, I can't say how much I appreciate that. Thank you so much for the visit. Always great to have you on the show, and I appreciate the friendship, Ian. Thank you very much.
Romy. Anytime, bud. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you down the road.
You too. Ian Eagle, what a pro. What an absolute pro. Like I said, find me two better people than the two guests I've had on already. You won't. You just won't. Class, class, class personified. 1-800-636-8686. Let me read this before I go to break. And this goes back to Sean Casey. Romy, I had no idea your show was the inspiration I would need today. Having just gotten some scary health news just hours ago, I spent the morning in crippling fear of what my future might look like. Enter Sean Casey. As simple a message as that was, we aren't all wired to go on the attack against our worst fears. We need someone to get in our face and say it. Thanks, Sean, for issuing that challenge and helping me change my perspective. Jeff in Crabchester. What a great note. I think I would say this, Jeff. First of all, great. I mean, I'm sorry for whatever you heard, but I'm really grateful and thankful that you heard Sean Casey and he gave you that lift, that bit of inspiration you needed. I think that he was not challenging you. He was just saying, this is my philosophy. We're all afraid. We are all afraid of something. Every one of us. We are all afraid. You're a liar if you don't have fear. He's saying, that's fine. It's okay to be afraid, but what are you going to do with the fear? Run to the fear. Don't sit around and do nothing. That's not going to fix it. He said the best way to deal with fear is to A, be prepared, and B, take action. And he said that's how he became a major leaguer, by being extremely prepared and always taking action. And always working and never taking a day off. But most of all, what he's saying is run to your fear. Don't run away from it. How do you become more brave? How do you become more courageous? By attacking your fear. So I'm glad you heard that, Jeff. I'm glad that that message resonated with you on day you need to hear it. But like I said, that's Case. He makes things better. All right, so now we look to the top of the hour. I've got an open segment next, but we look to the top of the hour. Get in here with your beefs. Start calling right now. Now you're on the clock. It's beef o'clock. It's half past beef. It's a quarter to beef. It's time to beef, or it will be at the top of the hour. 1-800-636-8686. Call with a beef. Tweet me a beef at Jim Rome. Email me a beef at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. The beef segment's at the top. Right now, here is your sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Once again, beef segment coming up next. Hit me with a beef, 1-800-636-8686. Write your beef, tweet a beef, email a beef. Next segment. All right, quick change of topics. To check in on my fellow half-chowds, my half-fam. How you chowderheads living? What are the opening day vibes like in Chowtown? Because from down here in SoCal, it seems like the talk of Chowtown right now is not the Sox. It's the hood. Put your ear to the ground in the city of Boston right now. At least this is how it seems here in Cali and and I have family there. I'm half you. I'm half fam. I'm half chowed. Never forget that. Put your ear to the ground, though, and what do you hear? That's the chatter about the hood man. Chatter about his job security. Chatter about the hood man being on the hot seat. I mean, it may sound pretty crazy, but it's not. And it's actually a real thing. It's almost like Boston is catching up to the rest of us when it comes to being over the mumbler's tired act. And way more importantly, it's almost like Bob Kraft is pretty much over the mumbler's tired act. But don't take it from me. Take it from Bob Kraft himself. Because all the speculation this week coming from Kraft's comments at the owners' meeting is as follows. Specifically, the comment in response to a question about the hood man being 19 wins away from breaking Don Shula's all-time head coaching wins record. Does Bob Kraft seem like he really cares about that?
Look, I'd like him to break Don Shula's record, but I'm not looking for any of our players to get great stats. That isn't, we're about winning and doing whatever we can to win, and that's what our focus is now. And it's very important to me that we make the playoffs, and that's what I hope happens next year.
Translation: if we don't make the playoffs, then nobody has to worry about any records. Do I look like I give a damn if he's the all-time winningest coach, if we never make the playoffs anymore? Here's the thing. The Patriots currently have the worst odds of winning the AFC East, and it's not even close. So the playoffs really do not seem like a given right now. In fact, anything but. You know, according to me and my research, teams that finish at the bottom of their division rarely make the postseason. And that's where they are right now. Fact, they're at the bottom of the AFC East, looking up at everybody else in the East. Fact. And if the hood does miss the playoffs again this year, then his red ass should absolutely be on fire. I don't care how many rings Hood has. Not making the playoffs every season is not okay. It's definitely not okay with the guy who owns the team, Bob Kraft. It's not just missing the playoffs either. Let's be honest. The team is a mess. Last season was an embarrassment. I don't care if you have 20 rings. You can't just bring in your old D coordinator, have him run the offense and call the plays just because, and then have that absolutely idiotic plan blow up in your face, and then when people call you on that, just flash your rings in front of everybody like that's going to make the whole thing go away. I mean, what the hell were you thinking when you did that, Hood? Those rings, even all of those rings, do not give him a pass on that. That's not how that works. And if the guy truly is the GOAT, if the guy truly is the GOAT and truly is the smartest guy ever, how did he ever do something that dumb in the first place? And that's not armchair QBing. That's not second guessing. Did anybody anywhere not named the Hood think that that was going to work or that that was a good idea? Of course that bleep blew up in his face and helped wreck their season. If anybody anywhere else ever tried to pull that crap, not only would they be out of a job, they'd probably be out of the profession altogether. That's how little sense that decision made. That's how bad of an idea that was. And again, if this dude really is the greatest ever, how could he possibly make such a ridiculous decision in the first place? Essentially, the all-time greatest coach made one of the all-time greatest coaching gaffes. And no, even this dude is not above reproach. Nobody is. Hood has to answer or mumble to somebody. We all do, including that guy. And in this case, that somebody is Bob Kraft. And before you rush in to say that Kraft would never saw that dude off, remember that quote from Seth Wickersham's piece. The quote that showed what Kraft really thinks of his head coach. It's an all-time quote. The quote about Kraft not wanting to leave Aspen to meet up with his team in Detroit because he didn't want to deal with the, quote, biggest bleeping hole in my life. Quote, you leave here and you leave some of the most brilliant people you've ever met. You pick up so much knowledge from all these brilliant minds, and I have to go to Detroit to be with the biggest effing bleep hole in my life, my head coach. End of quote. He said that. That's incredible. An incredible quote, but it also tells you how and why the tone has changed in New England once the winning went away. You know, that bleep hole savant act was cool when they were going to the Super Bowl every year. But clearly not so cool anymore. Clearly Bob Kraft is not okay with missing the playoffs and being mediocre and doing these crazy, bizarro coaching experiments that are doomed from the start. Kraft, that's not me either. Kraft essentially said that too this week.
In life, it's important to try to know what you don't know and then get the best people. I'm in no position to know whether going in that's the right thing. He's a very good guy, very smart, an engineer, works hard. And I think he got put in a difficult position. And I think it was sort of an experiment. And he worked very hard at it. And in retrospect, I don't think it was the right thing. And I feel bad for him because he's such a hard worker. He got put in a difficult position.
Kraft feeling badly for the Ticonderoga. Matt the Pencil. Yeah, I don't know. That does not sound like an owner who's all that hyped about the way things are going right now. And why would he be? The Ticonderoga fiasco was a humiliating disaster. And like I said, a fireable offense for anybody else. And flashing your rings is not going to get you out of it either, Hood. Even if Hood actually tried that move this week.
What would you say to them to give them a reason to be optimistic for what's ahead for the Patriots?
The last 25 years?
I like the way he double clutched. Yeah, sorry, Hood. That crap doesn't play. Nor does it fly. The last 25 years are not winning you any games today. The last 25 years are not moving any chains right now. The last 25 years are not getting you any third down stops right now. All those Lombardis cannot make a decent first round draft pick for you, Hood man. And you of all people know that. Mr. No Days Off. Mr. What Have You Done For Me Lately. Mr. I wrote the book on breaking guys off a year early as opposed to a year too late. You know, Hood, your own core values. How do they apply to everybody except you? I mean, how incredible would it be if Bob Kraft ends up doing Belichick the way Belichick did so many of his own dudes? And for the first time, it actually seems possible. Listen to what Kraft is saying. He's not paying the Hood for what he's already done because nobody gives a damn about that. Nobody understands that better than the Hood, believe me. He's paying him for what he's doing right now. He's paying him for what he might do in the future. And it says here, right now, the Pats are now just another team. Just another franchise. In fact, they're worse than that. As I said, they're at the bottom of their own division, looking up at all the rest. And Kraft has seen enough. Hoodman is finally feeling some heat, and he should be. His seat is already warm, and if the Pats take another big dump in their pants,
big dump in your pants,
the biggest, quote, bleep hole in Kraft's life is going to have his ass fully on fire. And he's going to deserve it. I never, ever thought that I would have to say this, but coach him up, Hood. Coach him up, because if you don't, you're the next one who is going to be shown the door. And you should understand that as well as anybody. Because how many guys have you shown the door to for coming up short? Or because you wanted them to be out the door a little bit too early as opposed to a little bit too late? How can that apply to every player but not the head coach? When the head coach has enforced it as, quote, the Patriot way. Hood, it would be only fitting if you were shown the door the same way you showed that same door to all the other greats that helped make you who you are. Let's beef. Oh, okay, Radio Man. Whatever you say, Radio Man.
Is this the beef jerky segment?
It is the beef jerky segment. When we come back, what is your beef? 1-800-636-8686. Hit me up on social media, on Twitter, with a beef. Email me a beef, Rome, R-O-M-E, at habitate.com. Hey, Chuck, who's going first? The calls or social media participants? We'll find out. Stay tuned. The beef segment is next.